Ecclesiastes 3, verse 1. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. Time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones. Time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war in a time of peace. The last couple weeks, we've been looking at the writings here of Solomon, and we've looked so far at chapters that talked about man's pursuit of meaning in life without God. Man trying to look to satisfy his inmost being in a world where he assumes there's no God. We looked at chapter 5, man trying to fill his life with riches. Last week we looked at chapter 2 where he tries to fill his life with pleasure. And in both times we found the same thing. Solomon, a man who had the ability, as we've said, to test these things to their fullest, came to the same conclusion that all without God is meaningless. It's vanity. It is empty. Life apart from God, man cannot find meaning. But when we come here to chapter 3, we see a very radical change in Solomon's tone. Here what we find is he answers the misery that man finds in a man-centered view of the world. And he turns to look at life with a God-centered perspective, understanding that there is a God and that God is working in our world. The man-centered view of life that we find, there finds no meaning in life. As we said, history, and under this view, is just a meaningless cycle of events. No purpose, no end to any of them. In fact, when you look at the writings of the Greek philosophers, these men who were trying to understand the world, and you look through the writings, they never had an interpretation of history. They looked at and they wrote histories about events, but trying to understand them and interpret them, you didn't find that. Because in their view, life had no meaning. Now, they did believe in these gods who had very little interaction with men, who just did things on their own whim, but no meaning, no purpose in them. And there was nothing to interpret. They just believed all was fate. Man has this destiny that he's going to go about to, but kind of meandering, meaningless. Because, again, they had no view of God in control of the world. No goal to which life is ultimately moving to. There was no purpose. There was no end. Man is just a prisoner in life. He's just trying to do the best he can. The analogy of a ship on the seas just being tossed to and fro without a rudder, without direction, just at the whims of the storms of life, from one storm to the next, just bouncing around in the waves without direction. But in this chapter, Solomon, who is evaluated these perspectives, says no to them, says that this view with a world without God is incorrect. And what we find instead, he sees a God-centered view of the world. He sees history as the unfolding of the plan of God, that the events that we see around us are the unfolding of a hand of God. And history has a meaning. It has a purpose. It's not this cyclical view of history that says that, things just go from one end to the other. Very similar to what he said in chapter 1. We read in chapter 1, he says that the sun rises, the sun goes down, and it hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes towards the south, towards the north, whirls around continually, and comes back again on its circuit. A view of life without God says, the same things, we see them over and over again. But when we understand what Solomon talks about in verse 3, we understand that God is in control, then history isn't the cycle. It's linear. It's heading towards a purpose. It's heading towards a destiny. that which God has determined it's going to turn to. When we see that, we understand that each event, every event in life, has its own time, has its own purpose, and has meaning because of that. What we see in verse 1, we go back again. And when we understand these things that we see in verse 1, you know, it's going to have a profound impact on our worldview, the way we look at life. Because what we've come to understand when we look at these verses is that all events in our life, no matter how great, no matter how small, have a purpose. They have a meaning to them. We can look at history in our own lives and we see those great events that we all kind of recognize are big and meaningful. But when we look here, we see that every event has purpose. Every event has meaning. Let's look again at verse 1. To everything, there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. It says, to everything, there is a season, and a time for every purpose. This is a Hebrew poetry, and you see this repetition of a theme, and he does that for emphasis, so that we understand everything has its time, and there's a purpose for everything that we see in life. And when we see this, what purpose are we talking about here? When he says here that there's a time for every purpose under heaven, what we see here is this is the plan and the purpose of God. And he goes on in verse 11 to say that specifically. He says, He has made, and this is God, He has made everything beautiful in its time. Everything is beautiful in God's time, His plan, His purpose. God ordains all the times that we read about. What we read about in verses 2 through 8, a time to be born, a time to die. God ordains that. And when it says a time to be born and a time to die, it means everything in between there. You know, it's like when God says, I'm the Alpha and the Omega. He also means I'm all the letters in between there. God ordained that every moment of our life. Time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck what is planted. God ordains every part of our life from the time you and I are born to the time we die. Every moment in between that, God has ordained a path and a purpose for our life. And all events come to meet God's purpose. When we understand history, we understand God is taking all of history, and that means us, our lives, to a place and to a purpose. The events of our life are not chance happenings. They're not things that happen without meaning, but without God. That's the only conclusion that you can come to. Without an all-knowing, all-wise being directing these things, it has no purpose. It has no meaning. That's the conclusion that man has come to time and time again. However, if God ordains our steps, once we understand what the Bible teaches, then everything in our life has meaning. Everything in our life has significance. Not just parts. Everything. Everything, there is a season. And there's a purpose for everything under heaven. And not only is it the things that happen, but even when they are happening, it says that they come in their season. These things happen when they're supposed to. If you look at your life right now, today, the things that occurred in your life today, take a moment, think back what happened in your life today. God ordained that. Maybe it was something that you thought was good. Maybe it was something that you think I could have done without. But God ordained that. There was a purpose behind that. As God's people, that should help us when we wake up in the morning. Say, God, what have you ordained for this day? What are you going to bring into my life this day? What are the purposes in my life today? What am I going to meet? What challenges am I going to face? How am I be tested? God determines when these things come into our life. They're not chance events, but when do they come in? It says in Ephesians 1, verse 11, it says, In Him also we have obtained an inheritance, being predestined according to the purpose of Him who works all things, again, all things, according to the counsel of His will. God, the Trinity, and the counsel of His own mind, determined before time began, these events, they're going to happen. Sought no counsel from man, no counsel needed. God, all-knowing, all-wise, has determined the plan that He is going to fulfill in history. And He's determined the things that are going to come into our life, the things that we're going to face in that. And this is the biblical worldview. Not fate, not chance events, but God working in history. And what we see in it, history records the activity of God. That's, you know, when we turn to the Bible, it's kind of, sometimes it's easy for us and we read the story of the children of Israel and we say, okay, that's the hand of God working in his people. But it's all history. You take a secular history book off the shelf that is the unfolding of the hand of God. It might be something that their interpretation of it might be wrong. They might be viewing it as someone who's man-centered, saying there is no God. So their interpretation of it might be wrong, but the actual events themselves is the unfolding of the hand of God, all of history. You read about the Civil War. You read about the American Revolution. You read about something that happened in China. Wherever you're looking, wherever you read about the things going on today, it's the unfolding of the hand of God. Nations rise, nations fall, all at the outworking of the hand of God. This is the biblical worldview, and this is what Solomon talks about here in chapter 3. And how we view these causes behind our life. Understanding this will change the way we look at our lives, change the way we look at the events in our life. But one of the things that it also forces us to do is to realize that we don't have control. And we talked about that some a little bit. But in our lives, we feel like we want control. I know that in this, the illusion of my mind, I feel better when I feel like I have control in events. But the reality is we don't have control. We like to feel comfortable like we do, but we don't. Things happen in our life because of the plan of God. And if we'll stop and look at the unplanned events in our life, we realize they have a significant impact on our lives. Things that we didn't plan change our lives. They change who we are. They mold and shape who we are. You think about family situations in your life, how unplanned events in your life change your life from a family situation. When I was in college, coming back on the weekends, I wasn't looking to get married. But God brought up Christy into my life, fell in love, and it's changed my life. It's who I am today, where I am today, as a result of an unplanned event in my mind. But in God's plan and purpose, there was a reason for that, and it shapes who I am today. You look at political events that are going on in the world today. We can't control who's going to win this election. We each can cast a vote, but at the end of the day, very limited control, but it's going to impact our lives. Even if the person that you want elected is elected, it's still going to be unplanned events that are going to impact you. Who to tax, who not to tax, where to go to war, not to go to war. Unplanned events in our life that impact our life. Things that we have no control over, but God has control over. God has planned. The natural events that occur in our life, illnesses, unplanned things that go on in our bodies, those things that we don't plan those things. They change us. The weather, there are people today in Florida who are going through an unplanned event. It's going to change some of their lives. But God is in control of those things. God has ordained the time and the season for these events to occur. And when we look at that, we compare the biblical worldview to that of much of the world today, a view of fatalism, where everything is determined by fate. Because men, they look at these unplanned events and they try to make sense of them. And apart from God, they make no sense. You look at it and you say, oh, it's just fate. People start talking about luck. This person's lucky or that person's unlucky or fortune smiled on this person. I heard someone say that today. It's not luck. It's not fortune. It's the hand of God working in our lives, shaping, molding us to who we need to be. This view, the fatalistic view, says man has no free will. Man can't change a situation. It's just things are going to be the way they're going to be. I have no control. I have no ability to respond, to react. It's just fate that's going to happen in my life. And people start to have this kind of apathetic view of life, and they just say, things are going to be what they're going to be. And I heard an analogy at one point. It's like a dog tied to a horse-drawn cart. The dog is going to go where the horse and wagon are going to go. He has no choice. He has a choice about how he responds to it. He can fight. He can buck up and try. He's still going to go to the same place. or he can bow his head and just follow along obediently wherever he goes and have just kind of an apathy of, well, I'm just going to end up going where I go, and that's how things are going to be. And, you know, that's how some people think, view life. It's just, my life's fixed. I'm going to just bow my head and, you know, I'm just going to kind of go along and nothing I can do about it, and, you know, kind of a woe is me attitude. The Stoics actually taught that that was the highest form that a man could achieve, was to be able to just resign himself to fate, not to complain, but just to dutifully go along. And with a life without God, a world without God, it's kind of what man is left with, because there is no meaning. The events just happen. They just occur. It's just a matter of, do I follow along or do I, you know, buck up against those? But Solomon, here in this chapter, in contrast to that, is teaching about God's providence, the hand of God at work in man's life. And you know, here he teaches that there's a personal, all-wise, loving God in control of everything. That's the biblical worldview. That's the view that you and I should have when we look at life around us. God, who knows everything, is all-powerful, and is loving, has ordained the steps, the seasons, the times, the purposes for the things that come in our life. And when we see that, you know, the wise man, as we've been reading in the Proverbs, that wise man will rest himself in the fact that God is in control and then just respond accordingly. That's man's role in this, is to respond accordingly to the hand of God. Not resignation, not apathy, but a life of faith. Ultimately, that's what we come down to when we understand that God is in control. That I don't have to have control. In fact, it's better if I don't have control. I can just have faith in the one who does have control. Put my life in his hand. Trust him. And know that one who loves me more than I can even begin to imagine is in control. And he's the one who's guiding, and he's the one who is directing these things. And in the Bible, one of the things, we're always charged with responsibility. We're not like the Stoic who says, oh, we just kind of bounce along. We have will in this. Our duty is under God, is our responsibility to respond accordingly and to obey him. In Deuteronomy 29:29, it says, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of his law. The secret things belong to God. Everything is not revealed to man. We don't know everything. There are unplanned things in our life, things that we don't understand. And in fact, Solomon, in verse 11, where we said that he's made everything beautiful in its time, he goes on to say, also he's put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to the end. You know, the secret things belong to God. We're not going to understand everything, but we do have the ability to understand enough that God is in control. And our responsibility are those things that are revealed belong to us, that we may do all the words of this law. Everything that God's commanded, that's our responsibility, is to respond. When the things of life come on, how do we respond to those? And when we understand that, that's when life has purpose. Life has meaning. When we understand that God is working all of this. God has a plan. God has a purpose. You know, I look back over my life and, you know, I don't understand everything that happened. I don't understand sometimes how I got to where I'm at. But God knows. God planned that. And I can have faith and trust him in that. And that brings purpose and meaning. When we get up tomorrow morning, there's a purpose and meaning behind that, because God has something planned for that day. And then when we see that, when we see in history in that context, and not just history when we think of, you know, global history, world history, my history, your history. When we see those things in that context, then life has purpose and life has meaning. And so when we come to this chapter, chapter 3, There's much to teach us in that. There's a lot of things for us to learn in our lives. And the first thing is just peace, comfort, to know that God is in control. When I get up tomorrow, I don't know what's going to happen. I have my plan. I get up. I go to work. I don't know how that's going to change. I don't know that I'll get up. I mean, none of us know those things. But I do know that God knows. And I do know that God loves me. And so I know that tomorrow will be what he's planned it to be. and I can take peace in that and comfort in that. We can't control it, but we can have the greatest peace in the world to know that it's better that we don't control it. You know, I know the plans that I had for my life when I was a teenager, when I was young. And I am thankful to God that that's not what I got. Because He knew better. If I were where I thought I would be, many of the blessings that I have in my life wouldn't be there. But God loved me. God knew better. God loves you, and He knows better. He knows what's best for our life. And so we can look. We've been reading in our family the life of Joseph. And I was thinking about that in Joseph's life, the peace and comfort that we can take looking at his life as well. You know, you think about Joseph's life. If there was someone who had a reason to be apathetic or to be disheartened or to be angry, Joseph. You know, he's goes out to go find his brothers, and he's sold into slavery, taken off to Egypt, winds up in Potiphar's house, but by the hand of God, the blessing of God, rises such that he's, you know, in control of the household. But then what happens? An unplanned event. Potiphar's wife tries to get him to commit sin, lies. He's thrown into prison. Again, you know, the Stoic would say, what can you do? You know, that's just the way it happened. You know, he wasn't very lucky. But no, God rose, took him, put him in Pharaoh's house to become number two in the land. Because God had a plan. God had a purpose. Because God had a people that he was going to bring into Egypt. And then God had a plan that he was going to show his power to the entire world by bringing his people out of that land. That's God's hand in history. That's what we see. And that's why you and I can have peace and comfort. I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. You know, we make our plans. We have plans for where we're going to go. And I don't know what God's plan is in all this. We're going to go and we're going to find out. We're going to trust that God is in control and that God is going to lead and God is going to direct. And we allow God to direct us. And we respond to His Word because what He wants to do is to make us like Christ. He wants to teach me. So the fruits of the Spirit are evident in our lives so that I can learn patience because I need to learn patience. I need to learn to love more. I need to understand joy more. God knows I need all of those things. He knows that you need all of those things. So in His plan and in His purpose, the things that He's going to bring in my life, the things we read here, we talk about a time to weep, a time to laugh. There are going to be times in my life I'm going to weep. There are going to be times I'm going to laugh. Same for you. Because God has a purpose in that. To make me more like Christ. To make me more what He intended for me to be. What He intends for you to be. And that's the purpose. That's the comfort I can take when I get up tomorrow. To know everything that's going to be in my life. Every event that you face in your life tomorrow and the next day. God is using those for His glory and to make you more like Christ. And that's what we want. That's what God's people want, to be more like Him. And God is going to do that. That's the plan that He's put forward for each of us. But the other thing for us to learn from this is in order for that to happen, we have a responsibility. You and I have to learn to discern the times. It talks about that there's a time to gain, a time to lose, a time to keep, a time to throw away. We have to learn to discern the times, to try to understand what it is that God wants from us in those times. You know, Esther, the book of Esther, talks about in chapter 4, Mordecai has discovered Haman's plot to wipe out the Jews, and he goes to Esther to say, you have to go to the king. And so she's fearful of that. And he says, you know what? God has a purpose in history. God is going to fulfill His purpose, whether you do this or not. But maybe, just maybe, you're here for a time such as this. Does she discern the time? Because there's a time in our life. This was a time for Esther to go to the king. But if she didn't, Mordecai said, God's going to still accomplish His purpose. Because God has a plan. But Esther had to know how to discern the times. You and I must learn to discern the times. It's our responsibility to study God's Word and to know how to respond when situations come in my life. God's going to bring something into my life tomorrow. I have a choice how to respond to it. His Word teaches me how to respond. I can't control the events, but God has ordained the means by which He's going to fulfill those things. My responsibility is to know His Word and to respond accordingly. Turn to Matthew 16. The first three verses of Matthew 16. Our Lord addressed discerning the times, understanding the times. He says, "Then the Pharisees and Sadducees came, and testing Him, asked that He would show them a sign from heaven. He answered and said to them, 'When it's evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and threatening. Hypocrites, you know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times.'" God says there's a time, and we must learn to discern it. We're like the Sadducees and the Pharisees. We know how to respond to the weather. You know if you look outside and you see that it's going to rain, what do? Take a raincoat. You adjust your plans. You make sure that if you were planning a picnic, maybe you change your plans. We're able to look out and see that and respond accordingly. It's the same thing with all of the times in our life. The times that we read about in Ecclesiastes 3, for each of those times, you and I must discern and respond and learn to read the times and to understand the times, because God is working. But the question is, do I see the times? Do I understand them? Do you? Do we see what it is that God's doing and how to respond? We see that it's going to rain, and those things happen in life, but so do the things that we read about in Ecclesiastes. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to laugh, a time to cry. Those things that come in our lives, do we discern the times? Are we in the Word understanding what God's doing in our life and how we need to respond? That's our responsibility before Him. Life has meaning, life has purpose, but do we discern the spiritual times? Do we see the things that God's doing in our lives? Solomon says God has purpose. God's trying to do something in history. God has a purpose that He's going to accomplish in history. He works through people. Do we discern the times? Do we see what it is that God's doing about us? Do we see His hand at work about us? Do we know how to respond? It says the secret things belong to God, but that which He's revealed belongs to us, so that we can obey His law, that we might respond, so that we might discern the times and see what it is that God's doing in history, so that we can be like Christ, so that we can respond to God's perfect plan and become of use to Him, to bring glory to Him. That's our responsibility in all of this. When we see the things going on in our lives, we see the history, the hand of God at work in our lives, we take peace and comfort in that. But we still have responsibility. We're not like the Stoic who says, there's nothing I can do about it. We're not those who say that man has no free will. He's like a puppet on a string. We understand that man has a will. Man has the responsibility under God, especially God's people, to respond accordingly. But we have to be able to discern the times. God's given us His Word that we might do that. So it's up to each of us in our lives to discern that, so that we're able to explain to the skeptic. So we're able to teach those who don't have a view that life has meaning, has purpose, because there's so many around us, that's their view of life. No meaning and no purpose in the events. We as God's people, we know better. We know different. But it's our responsibility to be able to come and discern the times, not asking for a sign from God, but to say, Lord, this is what You've brought me. This is what this day brings. And to respond to that accordingly. To be able to understand and to respond and in that to grow and to become more like Christ. That's what we can learn from Solomon here in Ecclesiastes 3. God is in control. God has a plan. And we have responsibility.